This week's mailbag comes to us from Pam. Lisa, you are so awesome. I just love you. You crack me up. You are so sensible and logical, and I love that. Everything you say just resonates with me. Your honesty is so enlightening. I love that you admit that you eat fast food often. I live in California, so no one ever admits to eating fast food, even occasionally. I love that you admit you would love a spring break alone at home where everyone would leave. I have always felt that way, even though I love my family and we were close, and everyone looked at me like I was the devil. I love how you are there for Abby and Grayson, but definitely have boundaries. I have the Sunday basket, and it has changed my life. It has taken a year, but I have finally moved my file cabinet contents into binders. It's amazing. I work part-time out of my home, and my youngest is just out of college. I am super, super clean and organized everywhere in my house. Drawers, closets, cupboards, but my desk, files, were my albatross, and it has taken many years to finally have time to fix it. I am trying to refine our emergency plan, and the binders were part of it. See, in California, we live in fear of fires. Anyway, just keep it up. I am beyond excited about the notion of you possibly getting a show. All the best to you, your family, and your team.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. All right, it is time to talk about the fourth essential area that you organize in your home, which is organizing your paper management. And you know, this is the category that makes my heart sing. I have been talking about paper organizing since long before anybody else wanted to talk about paper organizing. And now people are starting to realize that, hey, this paper is not going anywhere. I was like, yes, I knew that. Thanks for coming around to my way of thinking. So we've already covered organizing yourself, organizing your family spaces, and organizing storage. Last, we're going to talk about organizing your paper. Paper is interesting because you can organize it in any order. Like you could organize your paper first and then go back and do the other areas, or you can organize it last, or you can organize just parts of your paper. You don't have to organize all of your paper. But as we were doing the research, and you know, if I go back to when we first started the research, was what is the definition of housework? And that's when we realized it was actually that there is work related to running a house, but there are four kinds of work. There's cleaning, anything that a maid service can do. Tasks of daily living, which is anything that is of the person, things that need to be done for you and by you for your entire life, eating, bathing, laundry, all those things. Household maintenance, which is a current investment of money for a future return on money if you own your house. If you rent, somebody else does that for you. And organization, which is a current investment of time today for a future exponential return on time in the future. When we did the definition of housework, we also did a study called The Weight of Paper. So you can either go back into the Organized 365 podcast and find those research episodes, or you may be listening to this on our new one of our new playlists. And if you're a regular Organized 365 listener, we have started playlists. So now that we have over 600 episodes, I know it says we have 500, but we have over 100 Wednesday podcast episodes as well, and those are unnumbered. I realize that for new people, it's a lot of where do you start? Like, and what if you start in the middle of a series? It's very, very hard to figure out where to start in the Organized 365 podcast. 7.5 years of podcasting. You guys know I have a lot to say. So I've started these podcast playlists. So when you search in your podcast player, any podcast player for the Organized 365 podcast, you can also find the Organized 365 Friday Workbox playlist or research playlist or glossary playlist. And then you could just listen to the podcasts that are related to that topic. So if you go to the glossary playlist, you'll be able to hear our research that we did on the weight of paper. We talked about how different generations look at paper, the Sunday basket, why the binders are the solution for ditching the filing cabinet, and on and on and on. So when we did this final study that we did, and we defined home organization, how do you define home organization? Because we all have Swiss cheese organization. I did it in the most logical order that you think of getting yourself organized, which is your personal. Like if you're not organized yourself, it's really hard to have other organization because you yourself still feel frazzled and disorganized. So then it is family and communal spaces, which you can happily skip if you want to because it is going to get disorganized. Storage spaces, which is when you make those spaces in your house where you're putting things like a store so they're easy to retrieve when you want them with money you've already spent. And then the final one is paper organization. Now, you can go your entire life and not organize your papers. You can really go your entire life and pretend that housework doesn't exist and have no organization in your house. You're going to spend the time either way. You're going to spend the time looking for things, or you're going to spend the time organizing them so you can retrieve them more quickly. It seems like it's the same amount of time, but organization gives you more time in the future. So if you organize today, the same amount of time you're spending looking for things, you'll stop looking for things, which will give you exponential time in the future. Paper is different. Paper is different because 85% of what you store in your filing cabinet, you will never need again. And the 15% that you do need, when you want to look for it, it might be there and you can go find it. It's different because if you take the time to get rid of the 85% of the papers you don't need and organize the 15% that are left into four categories of binders, which are financial, medical, the paper for your house, and then the paper for how you run your house, when you go to look for those papers, you will be able to find them. And the only time you go to look for papers is when there's a problem. Yeah, pretty much. If you take the time to organize your paper, you are giving your future self, who is usually in crisis when they're looking for this paper, a big hug and a kiss. That's what you're doing. It's, you know, organizing your paper when you're done, you will feel a sense of accomplishment and you will feel like you've done a good job. But just like we just talked in the last podcast about organizing your storage and how 2/3 of people feel underappreciated for the time they take to create home organization systems. Yeah, doubly with paper. Because at least when you organize the storage, like if you organize the garage or if you organize the storage room and any family member does happen to go by that space, they are going to stop and go, oh, that looks good. Or they're going to say, wow, you spent a lot of time on this. It's very rare your family's going to be like, wow, our files look fabulous. I'm so glad you made those binders. I mean, they might, and then you should give them a hug and a kiss, but they're probably not. And it's because you're going from boxes and boxes of paper or files and files of paper, and your family is going to watch you look like a mad professor with papers flying around for months. You guys, it takes like 3 months to do this. It's not a quick procedure, which is why I love paper organizing retreats. It's why we did paper organizing retreats. And we will be bringing those back and highlighting those even more. But they've been going on this whole time. If you're like, yeah, I don't even know where to start. Great. Put it all in a car. Go to our events page. Find a certified organizer who's having a paper organizing retreat. Go hang out with them. Eat chocolate. Have your Diet Coke. Talk to friends. Laugh. And sort your papers. It'll be great. It's really fun. It's a fun way to do it. Organizing your paper not in crisis is, I mean, it is a testimony to your self-determination and discipline because people just don't do it. They just flat out don't do it. They don't even know it's a thing to do. And then when you're doing it, and if people say, what are you doing? And you said, oh yeah, I'm organizing my paper. They will look at you like you have 19 heads and green eyes. Like they'll just be like, what? Why? For what purpose? We still have paper? Which leads to a great conversation. And then how do you organize it? So I am speaking at the National Association of professional and productivity organizers. I will have already spoken there by the time you hear this podcast. And professional organizers also, they know how to organize their own paper. But to organize your paper, like, professional organizers just think differently. And so it's just difficult. It's difficult. So if you take the time to organize your paper, it is a gift to your future self of how to be able to find the papers when you need them. So think about the last time you needed a paper. You've probably needed to find your birth certificate or your kids' birth certificates numerous times. Where are birth certificates? I used to have them in a file labeled important in my filing cabinet, but then I was afraid I couldn't find that, so then I put it in my kitchen. Like, I kept moving where they were in case I would forget where they were. Birth certificates, social security cards, passports, marriage certificate, my kids' adoption certificates. These are papers that I needed all the time. What's hysterical to me is that until 10 years ago, they were always in different locations. Like, the birth certificates were not where the passports were not where the marriage certificate was. Like, why? Why were they not all together in one place? And now I have them in a binder, and I just use sheet protectors, and I have with a Sharpie the name of every family member, and all of their important documents are in there. Birth certificate, and anything. I think Greg even has something from when he registered for the Army. Joey, too. Like, when he was in school, they had to put him into the Selective Service or whatever. So all of that, military records, any of that paperwork that would be really hard to find, cost money, I have in there. When my father passed away, it was his driver's license. You need their driver's license number. I don't know why. His driver's license number, I had his military record, I had his birth certificate, death certificate, you know, all those things just in one sheet protector inside of the binder that I needed. Why do we put it in separate file folders? I don't understand our logic. Where is your homeowner's policy, your homeowner's insurance policy, your car insurance policy? We have these, so I used to have them divided out by car, in files, by person. What? Like, I don't understand my logic. The other thing I started doing when I was looking at organizing my own papers, I used to keep, like, I remember when I had my Honda Accord, if you could give all of your service records when you turned in your Honda Accord, you got an extra like $500 back from Honda, but they never asked me for this paper. And I don't know if I ever got the $500 back. You know, they have all the service records in their computer, right? Like, I always go to the same place to have my car serviced. They have all this information. Same thing with the dog. Like, first of all, the amount of care that is given to animals in this country is far superior than has been given to my children's medical. So my vet knows more about my dog than I know about my dog. They are not going to need me to produce a piece of paper to tell them about the time he was neutered 5 years ago. They have it all in their computer. Now, medical for my kids, I have a binder for that because, you know, a little more overwhelming. But the pets, I just keep the rabies vaccination thing. That's all I keep for Hunter. I don't keep any of the other things. There's so much that we keep in our file cabinet that is from how we used to use paper 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, but not how the world works today. Like, if you can find it online, you truly don't need it. But here's the thing. That's not why you need binders at all. That's not why we're organizing paper. It's not actually for the paper that's in your file cabinet. What? Right. I know. Your future self needs to have your medical, your financial, the things you would need to sell your house, and how you run your house, that information in a binder if anything should happen to you or for you to take care of those things yourself. Here's what I mean. If you were to sell your house, you need to have in that binder the improvements that you've made, the zoning things that you've put in for, like, we put a deck on, there's a zoning thing that went with that, the colors of paint that are in the room, people are going to want to know that information, how old all the appliances are, when you bought them, how much they cost. And you need to know that for yourself so that when the refrigerator dies, you know whether to fix it or just replace it, right? And so that's why you need that binder, to know how to continue to maintain your home and for the financial investment of your home when you go to sell it one day. Then your family operations binder, you need that one, so you can remember yourself what you want to do for the holidays next year. But also, like, I keep my travel packing list in there, which the kids always ask me for when we go to the beach. I keep anything related to Hunter in there. You know, that's where I would have kept the babysitting forms when I would give a babysitting form to the babysitter to fill out, that kind of stuff. It's like, how do I run this house on a day-to-day basis? In there, I have how we change out the smoke detector batteries in our ADT system. For whatever reason, it's like a 90-step process for me. I always do it wrong and have to be on the phone with ADT. I have a full step-by-step how to do it next time. Let's hope I don't have to call them. That kind of stuff. Like, how do you reprogram the garage door code thingy? That kind of stuff is in your operations binder. It's really like a lesson plan book for you as a homeowner and a family CEO. Your medical binder is for you to remember all of the vaccinations and surgeries and all those things that you've had, especially if you're going through something medically right now. I have everything in there, like from my hormone doctor since I'm 50, and I do these creams and stuff. So I love all the reports that they give me about how my body is changing, so I can then go home and research all that stuff. So that's what your medical binder is for you to advocate for your own health. And then if anyone was to step in as your power of healthcare. And then the financial binder, like if you're only ever going to do one binder, you need to do a financial binder. Because the financial binder is your current money and your future money. And if anybody is going to be your power of attorney and settle your estate, this is everything they need in order to settle your estate. Here's what you don't know. Only about 20% of what's in any of these binders is in your file cabinet or is paper at all. The other 80% is either on the computer and you know where it is, but nobody else knows where it is. So you either need to print it out or you need to tell them how to find it. And the majority of almost all of it is in your brain. Like we just have so much in our brain and in our phone that we just know and we remember. But if anything ever happens to you, how does anybody else do it? So I got a call the other day from someone in my hometown of Akron. I didn't even get a call. I got a voice message on Instagram. I didn't even know this was a thing. Someone tried to call me on Instagram. And of course, I'm addicted to Instagram. So it's meeting day. I'm at the end of my first meeting. I go over to Instagram to talk to you on Instagram. And I always go over and I check the messages I have. And I saw this voice thing. And my first thought was like, oh no, I'm not answering a call through Instagram. That's weird. And I look up above and there's like a text message also. And so I read the text message and it was a friend of my sister's. And she was texting me to tell me that there had been an ambulance at Emily's house and that she couldn't get a hold of Emily and she had not come to work because Emily now works at Firestone. And I was like, okay. So I messaged her back and then we were able to get on the phone. She did not have my phone number. And Emily Kelly did not have her phone either. So I tried to call Emily, I tried to call this person, so I got a hold of this person. So then once I got that information, no one at her work had thought to call the local hospital. So I called the local hospitals, there were a couple of chains. I found where Emily Kelly was, and they said, yes, she was brought in by ambulance, she has been discharged. I said, great, what time was that? They said 10, it was 10:45. I was like, all right. So I kept trying to call her phone, and I go through all my meetings. It's like 2:30, I'm driving to a meeting, I'm like, this is so weird. I still can't get a hold of my sister. So I call back the hospital and I was like, do you have a patient, Emily Kelly? And they were like, yes, she's in room, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you told me she was discharged. They're like, oh, she was discharged from the whatever place, put in another ambulance and take it down here. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I get to the nurse. I said, I'd like to talk to the nurse because her room, nobody answered in the room. They're like, well, I said, I want to talk to the nurse. So I got to the nurse. She's like, she's sleeping and I'm not waking her up. And I was like, well, has she given you permission to talk to me? And she's like, no. And I was like, what is going on? I know you can't tell me anything. I need you to ask her. She's going to give you permission so that I can talk to you. And she was like, well, she finally fell asleep and I am not waking her up. All I could tell you is she's not critical. I was like, ah. So I called back the person that worked with Emily and I said, okay, I found her. She's at Akron General. She's in this room. She's not critical. Da-da. She goes, okay, I'll finish up work here and I will head on over. So then I had Emily's colleague going over, but because she wasn't critical, I didn't get in the car and start going up to Akron. So Angela got there and then Emily Kelly called me and she had really bad vertigo. And so that's what the end diagnosis was. But at that time, they were still running CAT scans and MRIs and ruling out brain bleeds and ruling out stroke and ruling out all kinds of things. And so I waited until the next day and Emily emailed me to let me know she was up and showed me a picture of her crappy breakfast. And I was like, okay, she's good. She's in charge of her own healthcare again. So a couple days later, she's discharged from the hospital and she's talking to me on the phone and she's like, hey, I still can't really open my eyes very much. Can you please, you know, research this medicine and this medicine and this specific diagnosis? So she went and took a nap. I researched it, left her some Voxer messages. She woke up and she was like, you've already told me more about what I have than any of the doctors did at the hospital or anybody else I've talked about and all the drug interactions. She's like, why have you not been doing this the whole time? And I was like, well, first of all, I couldn't talk to your nurse because I didn't have power of healthcare or whatever. And then as soon as you were awake and eating and doing your own, I just figured you were in charge of your own healthcare. So I didn't do anything. And she said, well, that's so great that you're so respectful of my personal privacy, but don't ever do that again. She said, I don't have anybody, I'm not married, and I don't have anybody here advocating for me. And she's like, and I know nothing about medicine, and you know everything about medicine, and also Google like it's your job. She's like, I'm giving you full permission for the rest of my life to always be able to talk to any doctor, any nurse, and then research. And she said, I'll do what I want to do, but I want you to tell me everything you've learned and what you think so that I can then make a better decision. Because had you told me half of this stuff when I was in the hospital, I would have done different things. And I thought to myself, I thought, you know what? That's true. Because if I had started doing this for her, like I do for my kids, I would have had her already have physical therapy before she left the hospital, because I know that's how you help vertigo. But I figured she's an adult. She's in charge of her own life. I won't, you know, interfere. So I said to her, well, the best thing to do is for you to get your login to whatever healthcare system you're in. Give me your login. I'll log in from the app from where I am. I'll see all the test results as fast as the doctor see them. I'll be able to be Googling before anybody even gives any information. She goes, permission granted. We'll get it all set up. But that's a great example. I have all of my sister's end of life things. Like, I already have the contents of her safe in my house. Like, I already know everything to do if my sister were to pass away. But here she was, unable to communicate, in a hospital, far away from me, with no, and I was the next person to be contacted, but they never contacted me. So even if it's in her records or whatever, for whatever reason, they never reached out to me. And when I reached out to them, it did not show that I was able to. So I for sure am going to get a power of healthcare form so I can just fax it next time and they don't have to wake her up and they'll be able to tell me everything. And now that Emily and I have had this conversation, I now know that I have full permission to start researching and giving her advice and information. And she can always say, please stop, instead of me waiting for her to say, please help. And that is what organizing your paper does for you. It gives you, when you are in an emergency situation, options. Options. You know, the whole reason I say to ditch your filing cabinet and to have binders is because of what happened in 2017 when we had the hurricanes in Texas and the fires in California. And you and the Organized 365 community were saying, Lisa, what do we take with us when we evacuate? And I was like, well, you can't take a filing cabinet. You just have to leave it. And I thought, well, that's really bad advice. And now, just last week, I got a message from somebody saying, evacuating from the California fires, I have the Sunday basket, the binders, the dog, the kids, and us in the car, and we're leaving. Like, the fires are like two streets away, which is just heart-wrenching to hear. And yet, if you live in California, you know this is a possibility. If you live in Florida and Texas, you know hurricanes are a possibility. If you, like, you know the life events that are coming. Everyone's probably going to get hospitalized at some time in their lifetime. Everyone's definitely going to pass away at some time in their lifetime. You're probably going to need to evacuate at some point in your lifetime. Like, these things are going to happen. And when they happen, you need to have paperwork. And by paperwork, I mean three things. You need to have the physical paperwork, like birth certificate type stuff. You need to have whatever is on your computer, because you might not have your computer, or you might not be the one that needs the information. So somebody else may be trying to get it for you and they don't have your computer or your password or whatever. And what's in your brain? Because when you're sleeping in a hospital room and I can't get a hold of you, I don't have what's in your brain, and nor does the nurse and everybody else. So I'm stuck not being able to help advocate for my sister, because what's in her brain and what we thought was in place was not in place when we needed it. So let's get down to the research that we came out of this new study. 54% of the respondents indicated that they have piles of paper everywhere. You know why? You know why you have piles of paper everywhere? It's from last week. Your piles of paper are the things that you put down in the laundry room in the garage. These are things that are in process, that aren't done yet, that need to go somewhere, but maybe don't even have a place to go, but you need them, but you don't want to lose them, so you just put them in piles everywhere, because at least they're kind of visible if you put them down where the file cabinet is. Right? That's why you have piles. All this paper is in process. 54% also of Americans still use paper to capture their thoughts and to-dos. So in amongst those piles of paper, you have important papers, you have random to-do lists, you have things that you've written down. So funny. So in my phone, I keep for each of the kids, like under their contact, I have like all this random information, the medicines they're on, their social security numbers, whatever. So I'm with Joey and I'm looking through everything I have in the phone. I was like, hey, what's this 4 digits? He goes, I have no idea. I said, oh, I don't know either, but it's in the notes I have for you. He's like, he's just cracking up. We're at the bank. We were setting up another checking account. And they're like, does your mom have your social security number? He's like, yeah. Does your mom have this? Yeah. Does your mom have this? Yeah. Like, I have it all with me in my phone because I need it. But Joey also has it so that if I'm not with him, he needs it. So all this random stuff that we have, that we capture, that we need to know, sometimes other people need to know it too, and it's easiest to share that in paper. And here's the one, you know, of all the research that we did in the last paper study, we realized that the number one demographic of people who were interested in a paper organizing solution were millennial men. And that proved out to be true in this study as well. 70% of millennials in general perceive a reduction of stress when their paper is organized. And I think I know why this is. I mean, I know from my cousins who are millennials will tell me. And they say, Lisa, we're not allowed to have paper. I'm like, what do you mean you're not allowed to have paper? They're like, no, it's a thing. Like, we're the paperless generation, and so literally, we're not allowed to talk about the paper. We're not supposed to have the paper. We should be able to digitize it some way, so we pretend we don't have paper, and we have so much paper that we don't know what to do with it because nobody taught us what to do with it because we thought we weren't going to have any, and we can't ask our friends because they think they don't have paper either. So there's this amazing amount of stress from millennials who are all turning 40, so they have so much paper. America is a paper-based society, people. You have a deed to your house. You have a birth certificate. You're going to have a driver's license. Like, we have paper. You could have less paper, but you're never going to be paperless. So 4 binders is not a lot of paper. If you don't want to have the lesson plans for your house, fine. You don't want to own your house. You just want to rent. You just want to have a medical and financial binder, fine. But even when you rent, like there's the homeowners association and that policy, and there's just paper. And it's so much easier to be in your kitchen, grab a binder and flip through something versus getting on the phone or getting on the computer. And maybe that's just because I'm a Gen Xer. So maybe it's easier for you if you do get on the phone. I just know that when I get on the phone, I end up on Instagram and then I forget why I got on the phone, which was to check something that was not Instagram, but I automatically go to Instagram first. And when I'm done with Instagram, I check my email. And then I check orders for Organize 365, and then I check LinkedIn, and then I'm like, why was I even on here? So I just try not to get on my phone at all. It's just way easier if it's in paper. Now, I do want to give you an attaboy. We are doing a little bit better in this section than any other section. So remember, 87% of Americans believe organization is a learnable skill. So this is our highest percentage of Americans that have a system in place for organizing. 18% of respondents have a system in place for organizing their paper. I am so proud of you, kind of. That's less than 1 in 5 people. Less than 1 in 5 people have a system for organizing their paper. And that's the highest number. So when I did my very first study, which was the definition of a housework, my original aim was to prove that women are doing all the work. I know. I'm over it. And what I found was that was not true. Men and women were both doing work, and men actively want to take a part in doing the housework. I was wrong. I was totally wrong. I'm happy to say I was totally wrong. However, in this study, I was more right than I realized. Because in this study, our premise was that the academic research done to date on home organization, multiple studies said that organization is an optional hobby undertaken by women. What? Optional. Organization is completely optional. It's a hobby. It's undertaken by women. And I was like, okay, well, first of all, we've got to change that narrative. And second of all, well, the women are probably doing pretty good at getting organized, right? Because like it's a hobby that we like to take on. No, we're not. 87% of us surveyed, 84% in the first study, 87% in this study. That's like 3,000 people surveyed, you guys. Agree that organization is a learnable skill. These are statistically accurate studies with IRBs from Harrisburg University. Like this is academic research that we have done. And yet, when we say, do you have systems in place for this organization? No. The answer is a resounding no, we do not. 13% of us have storage systems. 14% of us have family systems. 15% of us are personally organized. And 18% of us have paper systems. So not only is our organization Swiss cheese, a little bit of personal, a little bit of family, a little bit of storage, we have less than 1 in 5 in every category. In some categories, less than 1 in 6 can say, I am personally organized. I am family organized. I'm storage. Well, no wonder we don't say we're organized. No one feels like they have any of these categories organized. And now that I have identified that this is the thing that we are desiring to be organized, we know it's a learnable skill. We're trying, but we're running around. It's a huge undertaking to be completely organized. You could do it in a year to 18 months. Those of you that are in the Productive Home Solution know that you're getting there, you're getting it done, or you're doing it on your own. I want to commend you. I want to break this down. I want to create bite-sized chunks that you can actually complete in one trimester and say, I am now personally organized and next I want to work on my paper. Or I am paper organized and next I want to work on my storage areas. I am storage organized and next I want to work on this. And if you need to do all four areas, you can run through the program 4 times. You'll get that done in 15 months. And you'll be able to say, I am organized personally in my communal spaces, in my storage, and in my paper. And in the next 2 podcasts, I'm going to hop into 2 categories of organization that we haven't touched on, which are completely optional. And they are organizing kits and organizing your photos and memorabilia.